Well, I am excited because I do get to talk to you today about my all-time favorite thing in life, and that is my relationships, my friendships. And we are going to talk about triple-dip friendships, celebrating the relationships in your life. And you may wonder, where in the world did she come up with the hokey title like that? I am the kind of gal who is always looking for an occasion to celebrate. I love to celebrate life, and I can pretty much turn just about anything into an occasion to celebrate. Birthdays are really huge at my house. Birthdays, holidays, first dance recitals. My son, the night that Mark McGuire hit his, you know, all-time winning award home run, and you know, people around the nation are glued to the television screen. We're at the Little League ballpark in town where my son hits his very first home run, and we are. You know, everybody else is talking about Mark McGuire, and we're like, but have you heard about this Parker Banks kid? I mean, because he is awesome. And so we went out, and we celebrated big. But I am always looking for an occasion to celebrate. And I was thinking about that and some of the great occasions that we've had to celebrate in my family. And I realized that although the occasions are always different, it seems like that there is one treat that is always part of our celebrations. And you can guess what that is. It's ice cream. And what is the granddaddy Big Kahuna ice cream treat of all? It has to be the triple dip banana split. And that is the treat that is reserved for the biggest occasions in our lives. So when I was thinking about that, I realized that I don't want to just celebrate the special occasions in our life, but I want to be found faithful to celebrate the special people in my life, something I definitely want to give my time and my energy and my heart to. So that's where the idea for triple dip friendships came up, because we're going to talk about three of my all-time favorite flavors of friendship. We're going to talk about the girls, the guy, and the God who makes them all sweeter. But this morning we get to talk about girlfriends, and I do love my girlfriends. They are highly important to me. A lot of my life centers around my girlfriends. I've worked very hard over the years to make some good solid relationships, and because of that I find myself today with the best set of girlfriends that I've ever had. So I'm very excited to share them with you. Well, let's talk just a little bit about a friend in general. What is a friend? I want you to get your mind thinking a little bit. What is a friend and what makes a good friend? Well, Webster's defines friend as someone on terms of affection and regard for one another, someone who freely supports and helps out at goodwill. They're an ally, a pal, a chum, a buddy. They also say that friendship is a harmonious cooperation between two people. And I love that phrase, harmonious cooperation, because to me, it really illustrates both the giving and the taking of friendship, doesn't it? Both the receiving and the giving. And I think it's very important to realize that we need a good, healthy balance in both of those areas of our friendship. Now, some of us are really good givers. We are always wanting to do for you. You need something, and, you know, we are all over it. We are, you know, whatever you need. You need a meal. You need a buddy. You need a fancy dress for a special occasion you can't afford to buy. And we've got one in our closet. You know, you can have it. We're big givers. But we're not always good receivers. We won't let you do for us. And because of that, we kind of hold you at a distance. Well, there are others of us that, you know, aren't very good givers. We always seem to be needy. You know, our problems always seem the biggest, and we spend most of the time in our relationships talking about ourselves and our needs, and don't take the time to stop and to notice what other people might be needing. We don't take the time to give. So I think it's very important that we have a healthy balance between giving and receiving. And by that, I don't mean that our friendships should always seem like a 50-50 deal. So, you know, please do not leave and think that you've heard me say that. Because honestly, there are times in my life that I'm just more needy, and I need a little more help from my friends. But there are other times in life that my friends are needier than I am. And the same thing is true in each of your lives, I'm sure. So it doesn't mean that it's always 50-50, but overall, I think overall the balance in the scheme of things, that we need to be both givers and receivers. And there does need to be a healthy balance of both of those things. Well, who needs a friend? I mean, isn't life full enough? If you're a career gal and you have a busy job, you know, who has time for friends? I mean, if you're a mom of young children and your life is consumed by feeding and diapering and you're sort of worn out at the end of the day, you know, are friendship really important at this phase of life? Well, the philosopher Bruce says that no life is so strong and complete but it yearns for a friend. Who needs a friend? We absolutely all do. I love what Mary Mitford says when she says, I thank God far more for my friends than for my daily bread, because friendship is the bread of life. And that's really how I feel about my friendships. They are definitely essential to me. So why should we celebrate our friends? Well, to me, life without friendship would be like a rainbow without color, or it would be like ice cream without the flavor. And that is something that I just absolutely cannot imagine. To me, friendship is one of the things that makes life so rich and so fulfilling. So I do think it's important that we celebrate our friendship. But what is so great about girlfriends? What is so particularly great about girlfriends? So many things. There's a book called Friends Through Thick and Thin, written by four ladies who've been best friends for like 25 years. And this book is a hoot. I gave Marianne a copy years ago because they tattle all over about each other. And it is really funny. But one of the things that one of them says in this book is, with whom but a girlfriend can you be shamelessly silly, reason in a totally illogical manner without fear of judgment, blubber on with guaranteed consolidation, change your mind without no explanation whatsoever, recite endless details with no point at all, be absolutely honest about how much you spent for your clothes, or rely on unqualified sympathy for an overweight body, an overdue period, or an overbearing mother-in-law? Pretty much a girlfriend is the only one that you could do those kind of things with and get any sort of empathy whatsoever, aren't they? They really are. I read got a hilarious email not too long ago. The top 10 things that only women can understand. Number 5, why bean sprouts aren't just weeds. Number 4 was fat clothes. Now, if there were men in this room, they'd be going, fat clothes? You know, what are fat clothes? Clothes that make you look fat? Clothes that feel fat? That's his overalls. But I don't have to explain to any of you women, do I, what fat clothes are. Fat clothes are, you know, those clothes, and it just is obviously a jeans and sweats, jeans kind of day, that kind of day, a t-shirt kind of day. A day when you just don't feel your very best. You need a little extra elastic around the middle, you know, a little spreading out room. Everybody knows what fat clothes are, every woman anyway. The number 3 thing that only women understand is taking a car trip without trying to beat your best time. And number 2, I love this one, the inaccuracy of every bathroom scale ever invented. Now, we know that those things are not right, don't we? I mean, absolutely they are not right. Some really twisted male has figured out that bathroom scale thing, I think. But the number 1 thing that only women can understand is other women. My husband and I teach, and we have for the last 10 years in our church, we have taught the Nearly Newlywed Sunday School class at our church, and we teach classes only on marriage. Everything that we do is on marriage. And one of the things that he tells each new, you know, each brand spanking new married group that comes through there full of hopes and dreams, he says, men, you're clueless. He said, just know it from the very beginning, you know. If they don't make sense, they're not going to make sense. And, you know, if you think that they're supposed to think like you do and reason like you do and see things the way you do, you know, you're starting out on the wrong foot right now. You know, realize that you're clueless, and it's going to be an ongoing pursuit of figuring out where they're going and why, what they're thinking of. So, girlfriends are particularly unique, and we as women are definitely unique from men, that's for sure. Well, what I would like to do is, as I said, I've worked very hard over the last several years on my friendships, and I've narrowed it down to what I think are the top 10 lessons that I have learned from my girlfriends. One of the things I most love about girlfriends is that girlfriends are the family that we get to choose for ourselves. And if you think about it, none of us got to choose the family that we were born or that we were raised into, did we? Absolutely not. I am imagining that if I were to pass out a ballot sheet and you were to write in one corner the names of one column, the names of every family member on your list, and if next to it you were given the option of voting whether or not, you know, you had them in your family, I'm guessing that there are a couple of apples in everybody's tree that you might not have voted in the bunch. And you certainly, if you're a married woman, you certainly did not get a vote on the family that came with your husband, did you? But girlfriends are the family we get to choose. And the number one, the first lesson that I've learned from my family of choice, I've learned from my friend Denise, and that is that you have to be a friend to have a friend. And my friend Denise is an absolute expert at this. I've always said that she has more friends than anybody I've ever met in my life. And I think it is because her life really exemplifies this fact. Denise is never one who waits for somebody to come be a friend to her. The way we met totally exemplifies that. I was in college and I was visiting my home church, which had grown dramatically while I was away at school. I didn't know a lot of people there. Most of the friends I had grown up in the youth group had left to go to college other places. And I can remember sitting by myself and Denise came up and introduced herself to me and sat down because she realized that she had not seen me before. Now, that may make you think that Denise is some gregarious, outgoing, take-charge kind of gal. But Denise is very quiet. She is not real outgoing. She definitely does not have a forceful personality. But she is truly gifted at being a friend. And I think unfortunately, we as women so often wait for somebody to come to us and to want to be a friend to us, don't we? We are always hoping that somebody will come and sit by us, or somebody will talk to us at that party that we go to at church. But instead of focusing on being a friend, we're focusing on, you know, somebody wanting to be our friend. But my friend Denise is great at being a friend. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, the only way to have a friend is to be one. And I think that's true. You have to be really willing to get vulnerable, to break out of your shell, and to go try to be a friend with somebody else. Can you just imagine if all of us waited for somebody to come to us to be our friend? What a lonely place this would be, wouldn't it? If we all just sat around waiting for somebody to come to us. So I think the number one lesson that I've learned is you must be a friend to have a friend. Focus on becoming a friend rather than just finding one. The second lesson of friendship that my girlfriends have taught me is to treat your friends like a priority. And this is another lesson that my friend Denise is just a beautiful expert at. Because although I said she has lots of friends, she somehow knows how to make me feel like a priority in her life. And Proverbs 17:17 says that a friend loves at all times, not just when it's convenient, not just when they need a friend, not just when they need someone to go somewhere with, but a friend loves at all times. And the way that my friend Denise does this for me is, I can count on, if I haven't talked to her in a couple of days, I'm going to be getting a phone call. And she's going to say something like, you know, I haven't seen you in a while. What's been going on? I know that she is going to check in with me on a regular basis. So she treats me like a priority. I know that I'm a priority in her life. She has three children, lives in the same hometown with all her relatives, highly involved in our church, plays tennis several times a week. You know, she's a busy gal. She's got things to do. But the way that she keeps up with me and checks in on me makes me feel like I'm a priority in her life. And because of that, we have been friends since we were singles in our singles department at our church. We've literally been friends through thick and thin. We have shared absolutely everything. We have shared clothes. We've shared desserts. We've shared children. We have shared everything but our husbands. And I think that's because, absolutely, because, you know, there is one line that even the best of girlfriends have to draw, and that's it right there. You know, don't mess with my husband. But we have shared everything else. When we were pregnant at the same time. The first time, I bought shirts that went with her skirt. You know, she bought shirts that went with my pants. I mean, we have, you know, spent 20 years swapping clothes back and forth. We live a couple of blocks from each other. But she does treat me like a priority. You know, I read a greeting card one time that said, a friend is a gift that you give yourself. And I remember thinking, you know, I just don't know if I believe that. Because to me, a gift implies that it's an extra, that it's a special treat. And that's not how I look at my friendships at all. To me, they're a necessity. So I think treating our friends like a priority is a really important lesson for all of us to learn. The third lesson that my friends have taught me is that friends come in all shapes and sizes. I bet you can't imagine who taught me that lesson. That would be my friend Mary Ann, because you don't have to look far at all to not notice immediately, those girls do not look a thing alike. When I first met Mary Ann at the BSU in Norman, the first thought was that she did not have friendship material written all across her. First of all, she was very tall and leggy, and I pretty much make it a key part of my life to stay away from tall, leggy women. And especially if they're dark, tall, leggy women. So her, you know, Japanese jet black hair against my very blonde, you know, very short-legged frame. Just really makes me feel short and plain. So that's the first thing that I noticed about her. The second thing I noticed was the way that she carried herself. And I thought, well, she looks like a model or something, you know. We definitely would not like somebody like that. Not at all. So I thought she was some sophisticated society kind of broad, and she was, you know, I'd probably been trained in all the charming ways of the world and, you know, knew which fork to eat from and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I figured we would not have a thing in common. So what I've learned from Marianne is to never judge a girlfriend by her cover. One of the most hilarious experiences we have ever had as a friend was when we had to share a dressing room in a Harold's Outlet in Texas a couple years ago. Now, because Marianne and I do not live in the same town and haven't for most of our married friendship life anyway, we don't ever get to shop together. So this was a very unusual opportunity. There was the place was packed with people, and there was only one dressing room. But the dressing room was like the size of a bedroom. It was huge, so we both went in there. Had to be one of the all-time most hysterical experiences, because here is Marianne, you know, all 6 foot legs of her, you know, no waist, jet black hair, and here I am, you know, short little blonde, and no legs, all waist. Marianne looks, as you all know, to die for phenomenal in black and white. So all her clothes are black and white. There are no two colors that look worse against my face than black or white. So all of my clothes are browns and yellows and tans and creams, nice little warm tones. As we stand in front of the mirror, as I said, Marianne is all legs. There is not a stinking pair of pants in the entire store that doesn't show her ankle when she tries them on. Well, there is not a pair of pants that I have on that I don't have rolled up like 4 times just to find where my toes are. So we did. We just sat in there and had a field day. I don't know how many clothes we tried on that day. Way too many. We had way too much fun, I can tell you that. But nothing was alike. I mean, it was like we bought things from 2 different stores. You would never even have known that we were in the same place. But it was absolutely hysterical, and I thought, you know, in there looking at her in the mirror, how in the world did we ever hook up? Well, as different as we look on the outside, I am sure that if you were to x-ray our hearts, that you would find 2 hearts that beat as one. Because in Marianne, I have found what Lucy Maud Montgomery calls in her Anne of Green Gables book, a kindred spirit. I love when her main character Anne says of her friend Diana, "I've dreamed of meeting her my whole life. A bosom friend, an intimate friend, you know, a really kindred spirit to whom I can confide my inmost soul." And that is what I found in my friend Marianne. Dee Bresden says in her books, The Friendship of Women, she says, "While a person can find friends by being friendly, that soulmates are a special gift from God." And that's what she is to me. As I mentioned, we have not lived in the same town for about 15 years. I'm going to embarrass you and read your card. The downside of that is we never spend our birthdays together. But we've spent a lot of pretend birthdays together. And when you know you've got a kindred spirit, is somebody who would celebrate exactly the same way you would, without ever having talked about what you would do on your perfect day. Well, this is a birthday card that Marianne sent me, you know, 6 years ago when we were in the midst of babies and diapers and, you know, all of that. We were not seeing each other. Oh, I don't even know if we were seeing each other once a year. And this is what she writes. "Happy birthday, Vicki. I wish I could be there to take you to lunch and to give you a big hug. Close your eyes and now pretend that we have been beamed up and over to England." Okay, now we are walking down the street filled with cottages and quaint shops. We stop and have tea at a local bistro because my friend Marianne knows I'm one of the few remaining adult women that absolutely abhors even the smell of coffee. So we would definitely be having tea. The weather is perfect. I hate being cold. So we have our tea outside, and the waiter brings on the patio laden with roses and peonies. She knew peonies. The waiter brings pedophores with purple, pink, and yellow icing, and a wonderful chocolate torte that brings huge smiles to our faces, because in my mind, there is no reason to celebrate if chocolate is not somehow involved. I believe that it is one of the 4 main food groups, and she knows that. The tea is very smooth and warm, so after 3 refills, we powder our noses and finish our shopping for Christmas 94, finding perfect gifts for each family member without any headaches or sore feet. Now, my birthday is in March. One of the things that Marianne and I share in common is this elusive dream that at one time before we die, we will be organized. And so on my pretend birthday in March, we have shopped, 9 months ahead and bought perfect gifts for everybody else. The chocolate tour was magic, causing each of us to lose that last 5 pounds. So that when we tried on clothes at Harrods, everything fit perfect, even that new spring swimsuit. Now, I've never in my life tried on a swimsuit that fit perfect, so it would definitely be a perfect, elusive birthday. Well, after making ample purchases with our limitless credit cards, we went back to our palace. Oh, she is talking to me now. Where our servants draw bubble baths and provide fresh pajamas. And when we were starting to get sleepy, we were beamed back to our houses and tucked into our beds with sugar plums dancing in our heads. How's that for a birthday trip? I love you, M.A. Now that is a soul sister. Because that is definitely the way that I would celebrate my dream birthday. And we had never talked about doing any of those things, England or anything, but she just knew. Heard it said that the most valuable antiques are old friends. And I think Marianne's looking pretty good for her age, so. A fourth lesson that I have learned from my girlfriends is also from Marianne, and that is that soul sisters are worth the cost of maintenance. Now, you can imagine after 20 years of friendship, 15 of which we haven't lived in the same town, that it's taken a little bit of maintenance to maintain our friendship. And it does take. Friendship takes some maintenance. Anything worthwhile requires a little extra care and attention. It has required our time, it's required our attention, and every now and then it's required a little bit of dinero to maintain the friendship, to be able to get together at least once a year or whatever it is. I tell Marianne that she's a lot of work. She's a lot of work, but she really is worth it. But are soul sisters worth the maintenance? Well, absolutely. Because if I know if I were to head home to Oklahoma City after this event, and if my world were to come crashing down in one quick phone call to my friend Marianne, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that she would be on her knees before God for me. And she would do absolutely anything that was in her power to do to take care of me at that time. I know that. So are soul sisters worth the maintenance? There's not a day that goes by that I ever question that. I do think friendship is a lot of work. Sometimes it's more work than others, but it is definitely worth the cost of maintenance. A fifth lesson I've learned from my girlfriends is that service with a smile endears you. And this is from my good friend Dana. 1 John 3:17-18 says, "If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God even be in him? Let us not love with words or with tongue, but with actions and in truth." And my friend Dana is a master at meeting practical needs. She has made more friends by taking meals to someone who's just had surgery, by watering their plants when they went out of town, by offering to keep their kids. You name it. If you have a practical need, she is offering to take care of it before any of the rest of us even notice that you have the need. And because of that, she has a very healthy group of friends for that one reason alone, because she is very quick to meet the practical needs and somehow make you feel like there's absolutely nothing else in the world that I would rather do. The greatest privilege in life would be for me to water your plants and pick up your mail while you're in some fabulous exotic locale, far, far from home. But she does. She really knows how to make you feel like that. She's great at meeting a practical need. A sixth lesson that I've learned from my friends also came from my friend Dana. And that is that sharing life includes weeping and rejoicing. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And one of the reasons why my friend Dana and I have such a sweet friendship is we have done a lot of weeping and rejoicing together over the years. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do was to tell my friend Dana that I was pregnant the first time. Because while she had been trying for years and years and years, it was a brand new thought in my brain. And I will never forget the day that I went to tell her I was pregnant. It was with fear and trepidation. I was really worried. How was this going to affect her, and how was this going to affect our friendship? But the way that she responded to me that day sealed our friendship for life. Because without skipping a beat, she squealed, threw out her arms, and grabbed hold of me. And then I will never forget the words she said. She said, "Vicki, I don't know if Ken and I will ever be pregnant, but I do know that I want to be part of yours." And she said, "Please do not worry about me and don't leave me out." She said, "I want to go maternity shopping. I want to do the whole nine yards. I want to do it all with you. I want to experience it with you." Well, that is a girlfriend. And I tell you, one of the greatest joys in our life, interestingly enough, was 9 months after my daughter was born was the day that Brian and I took Ken and Dana to their own delivery room of sorts where they adopted their very first, their only child, Chelsea, who is our godchild. We were the only two people that got to go in the room with them when they handed her to them. I took the still shots and my husband took the video camera. It was one of the greatest memories of my life. It was every bit a delivery room kind of experience. It was just really an over-the-top day. And I remember that day as if it were yesterday. It was 11 years ago and it's still very fresh in my mind. We have held hands through family funerals and some of the really darkest days. But a lot of weeping and a lot of rejoicing. You know, I can't explain it, but I do believe it's true that shared joy is joy doubled and shared sorrow is somehow sorrowed half. It just does not make sense on paper, but it's the truth. When we were sharing in our small groups last night about what we felt was the greatest benefit of friendship, it's what I said, is I think friends make... What I love about it is the sharing of life, because I think when things are good, when things happen to me that are good, they're even better if I get to celebrate them with my girlfriends. And when my life is really in the pits and things are really not looking good, somehow it's not as bad if I have somebody who will hold my hand and walk through it with me. And Dana and I have been that kind of friendship. We don't get to see each other a lot now. Our lives are in totally different places because of the schooling of our children and some different things. But because we have these memories, we have heartstrings that tie our hearts together forever. Very, very precious. Very, very dear friend. A seventh lesson that I've learned from my girlfriends is that a praying friend is a priceless friend. And I've learned this from my friend Cindy. Job 16, 20 and 21. You know, Job had some trouble with his friends, didn't he? I mean, they were some real lulus. The people who were supposed to be his best friends, you know, really ended up making his misery even more miserable. Isn't that a sad thing to have to think about? But in Job 16, 20 and 21, he says, "My intercessor is my friend. As my eyes pour out tears to God, on behalf of a man, he pleads with God as a man pleads for his friends." Beautiful, beautiful verses. And that's what my friend Cindy is to me. Like Mary Ann, Cindy and I look absolutely nothing alike. But not only do we not look alike, we have absolutely zero personality traits in common. Cindy is the epitome of Little House on the Prairie. If you ever watched that show growing up, I've always thought Cindy would be happiest in a remote little cabin, off somewhere, baking bread, birthing her babies by herself, and, you know, homeschooling, you know, 12 children, that she would be in absolute bliss. Well, you've probably heard me talk just long enough to know that each of those things would make me stark raving mad. But my friend Cindy can flat do business with God when it comes to prayer. And I remember a couple years ago, I shared last night that I had a couple of really nasty years. We call them the hysterical years, the prehysterectomy years. And there was one particular occasion I had a speaking event, actually at our home church. And what sometimes happens that speakers live in fear of is the event comes, it comes time for the event, and you still do not have an impression of what God wants you to talk about. I had known about this event for months. I had prayed and prayed. I was in the Word daily. I was reading it, and I could not figure out what He wanted me to do. And it was that time of the month when I was in dire physical pain, and it was the day before this event. I remember that I made one phone call. I took a pain pill, and I made one phone call, and it was to my friend Cindy, and I said, you know, I am desperate here, and bawling, I explained to her, I still don't know what I'm supposed to share tomorrow night, you know, and, you know, how I was feeling and everything else. You know, would you please pray for me? I made that phone call, I hung up the phone, and I could not even walk back to my bed. That's what pain I was in, and I laid down there on the floor next to the telephone until the pain medicine finally began to help some and fell asleep. I want you to know I woke up 2 hours later, pulled out a sheet of paper and a pen, and from top to bottom that 45 minutes wrote itself. It was as if the hand of God was writing that pen. That's never happened in my life. And I am here to tell you that pain medicine has zero to do with that. I mean, most people's brain get foggy when they're on pain medicine. But I know that it is because my friend Cindy did some serious business with God on my behalf. So a praying friend is definitely a priceless friend. And I am so grateful to her for that. An eighth lesson I've learned from my girlfriends is from my good buddy Robin Holland here, and that is to be real and to listen well. Proverbs 25, I love. The purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. And my friend Robin is just excellent at this. She has a great thinking brain, and she is a deep soul. And she is one of the few people in my life that I do not have to pry and pull to get something out of. And so to me, she is a true breath of fresh air. I love being with Robin because I can count on her asking me questions that nobody else will ask me. She allows me to think, and I love that. You know, questions like, well, you know, what do you most appreciate about your husband? You know, things I really need to be thinking about and focusing on, and I love that about her. She takes the time to draw me out like virtually nobody in my life. Now, you're probably thinking, well, that's because the woman talks so much. Nobody has to draw her out. But Robin does draw me out. And what I also love about her is her transparency. She is not afraid to share with me her shortcomings, her struggles, her fears, her concerns. And because of that, you know, interestingly enough, it makes it easier for me to share mine. And I love that about her. I think that we as women have a tendency to put a lot more on every day when we get up other than makeup. I think we also have a tendency to put masks on our life. And we walk around pretending that things are okay in our world. And we walk around pretending that we're someone that we're really not. And because of that, we really keep ourselves from deep, intimate friendships. But it is the person who's not afraid to be real, to be transparent, to be vulnerable, that makes you feel like you really know them and helps you to pour your heart back. I think it was the philosopher Seneca that said that one of the most beautiful qualities of true friendship is to understand and to be understood. And Robin does that for me. She helps me to understand her, and she helps me to be understood, and I love that. A poem I came across not too long ago by Mary Carolyn Davies, If I Had Known, I think really depicts this kind of friend. It says, if I had known what trouble you were bearing, what griefs were in the silence of your face, I would have been more gentle and more caring and tried to give you gladness for a space. I would have brought more warmth into the place if I had known. If I had known what thoughts despairing drew you, why do we never try to understand? I would have lent a little friendship to you when we need help. Unfortunately, we tend to really not like the fact that other people don't seem to, you know, want to help us out or don't understand how much we're hurting or aren't empathetic. But part of the reason is because we don't let them know that we have needs, that we're hurting. And so I think a friend like Robin is one who really makes a difference there. And I think it's a good lesson to learn is to be very real and to listen well. Ninth lesson I've learned from my girlfriends is from my good friend Stephanie, and that is that there's always room for one more. Because when Stephanie and I became friends, I would have told you that I really didn't need a new friend at the time. I had a lot of good girlfriends when Stephanie came into town. But Stephanie was pretty new into town when she found herself surprisingly pregnant. But not only was she surprisingly pregnant, she was surprisingly pregnant with three children under the age of four. And because she had three children under the age of four, her body was in shambles on the inside. And her doctor immediately put her to bed and told her he did not want her to bend over so much as to pick up a piece of paper from the floor with three children under the age of four. Well, I can remember my friend Denise, who I spoke about earlier, coming to me and saying, Vicki, we're just flat going to have to take care of this girl. You know, see, there is nobody else to take care of her. Well, Denise is an expert at organization, and in no time at all, she had meals for every night of the week planned for her, like for 8 more months. You know, just like that. I would still be trying to figure that out. You know, 4 years later, Isaac is four now. But for some reason, my schedule was a little more flexible at that time than some of the other girls in our kind of friendship sphere.
And so I was the one that went to Stephanie's house once a week and did her laundry. Now, before lightning strikes from heaven, let me say that the gift of service is absolutely no natural place in my life. And I pretty much despise anything that has to do with cleaning. It not only is what I don't do well, I just desperately do not like it or anything about it. But it was what my friend Stephanie needed. And I certainly couldn't organize her meals, and, you know, she would have been in big trouble. She would have starved to death a long time ago had I done that. But, so I went over once a week to do her laundry. And, you know, I may not be very good at organization, and I may not be very good at laundry, but I can flat chat with the best of them. And I am a pretty good listener, too. And I tell you, you can become really intimate with somebody when you're folding their underwear every week. And my friend Stephanie and I became intimate, lifelong friends. Now, Stephanie is a styling and profiling kind of friend. She is one of those friends. She is sharp. She is sassy. She, you know, always looks from head to toe, and she is an absolute hoot. Her and her husband bring more laughter in my life than probably any other two people married together that I know. And I absolutely cannot imagine missing out on her just because I didn't realize that I needed a new friend. I am so glad that God knew that I needed this friend. I cannot imagine missing out on her. Amazingly enough, she has now had her fifth child. but she is just a ton of fun and brings great joy in my life, and I would have hated to miss her. So there is always room for one more, whether or not it seems like that there is. And I am so grateful for that lesson. A tenth and final lesson of the 10 I'm going to share today anyway, of the lessons I've learned from my girlfriends, is that dreams are better when shared. And this has never been truer in my life than in the last couple of years when God has done some really amazing things for me in the area of writing. I mentioned last night that I didn't know anybody who had ever been published when I really felt God laid that dream on my heart. And I didn't even know anybody that wrote at the time, but he immediately brought people into my life that was their heartbeat. I have two good girlfriends in the city, Nolene and Kelly, who very much share this. And when I got the guidelines for this first book that I submitted stories to, I gave them to my friend Kelly. And she submitted some stories too. And I can remember being so concerned, you know, what if they take one of our stories and they don't take the other one? And honestly prayed to God, God, please don't let them accept my stories if they don't accept Kelly's, because I so wanted us to get to do this together. Well, do you know, they took two of mine and two of hers. And we have, I cannot tell you, I mean, it ought to be embarrassing. Well, we drug another friend to Barnes & Noble with us to take our picture, you know, with our book. I mean, you know, four pages of the book were ours, you know. We're in there with cameras, you know. It's like a TV crew, you know. Take our picture. This is our book. You know, we wanted the bookshelves behind us. I mean, we really, you know, set ourselves up, you know, just right. But we had the biggest fun doing that and sharing that dream together. My friend Nolene has just had her very first book published, Rare and Beautiful Treasures, just about a week or so ago from a company just right by here, as a matter of fact, in Tulsa. Nolene Niles is her name. And how much fun did we have? When her book came out, we threw a huge book signing party for her. One of the greatest days in all of our memories. I mean, we did it up big. And she had the time of her life. We had her set up at a little table with a fancy pen and had this big old display behind her. A beautiful, beautiful memory. But it was sharing it that made it so much fun, sharing the dreams. God has given me, I bet, half a dozen new friends in the last year that I never knew before from my speakers group that have become intimate friends, many of whom I've never even seen face to face. I mean, isn't that interesting? We have a weekly chat session our speakers group does online, and every Tuesday night I talk to these girls. I know about their husbands. I know what they struggle with. I know all sorts of things. Because, you know, you'll write all sorts of things you'd never say out loud. So great intimate friends. And I mean, when one of us gets a book contract, I mean, it is exclamation marks all over the computer screen. You know, everybody, these are pretty gregarious kind of speaker gals. And so, you know, everybody has different font and different bright colors. And I mean, you know, it goes wild all over the screen with the Yahoos, Yippee Skippy. I mean, you name it. And they're, you know, writing it in back and forth in our chat session. So much fun to share dreams. It does make it a lot more fun. You know, a real friend is one who helps us to think our best thoughts, do our noblest deeds, and be our very finest self. And so a friend that encourages your dreams and shares in the reality of them is a very precious thing. But you know, we are not going to make good girlfriends, are we, unless we get out there in the first place. You are just not going to make good girlfriends sitting at home watching Oprah and eating chocolate M&Ms. It's just not going to happen. I mean, it may sound like a fun respite every now and then, but it is really not the way to make good girlfriends. So for us to make really deep, intimate friendships, we're going to have to get out where the people are. And that means when you go to that women's retreat, that you don't find the first available chair and sit down by yourself in hopes that somebody comes and sits next to you. But that means you find where the people are, which usually is around food. You find where the people are, and you get back there, and you chat. Or you walk into a room, and you look for that one girl that is sitting by herself, or that looks a little bit uncomfortable or out of sorts, and you make a beeline to her and introduce yourself. Another thing I think we have to do is to look for common interests and make the most of them. You know, if you're a mother of young children and you go to the local McDonald's and you're sitting on one of those hard benches while your child is, you know, climbing in the balls and, you know, climbing on the jungle gym and all that, you don't have to look very far at all before you'll see another woman doing the exact same thing. And if you don't know anything else about her, if you don't know if she's married or not, if she's a working woman, if she's a stay-at-home mom, if she's a Christian or not, you know immediately that you have something in common because you know that you are both interested in the welfare of your children. And that is enough to spark up a conversation. You know, how old is your little boy? Is that the only child you have? You know, are you from here? Have you lived here all your life? I mean, it's enough to know to start a conversation. You know, if you play tennis, you know, joining the local tennis league. If you like to read, the library in town probably has a book club that you can get into. But look for people that have common interests and then really pursue those and make the best of them. I think another thing we can do to help our friendships is to have reasonable expectations and to realize that God never meant for one person to meet all our needs. We will talk in the next session about our husbands and about the real number that we do on them by trying to get them to meet all our needs. But he didn't mean for one girlfriend to meet all our needs either. I think he wants us to broaden our horizons a little bit, to branch out a little bit. So I think that when it comes to friendship, that variety is definitely a very, very good thing. Well, what's so great about girlfriends? Well, a good girlfriend is one he'll tell you when you have food in your teeth, when your skirt's tucked in your pantyhose, and when you have toilet paper on your shoe. You know, I mean, anybody else will just let you walk around looking like a total idiot. But a good girlfriend will tell you those things, won't you? She tells you the truth when it hurts, but it helps. A good girlfriend bails you out. She helps you spend your money. She helps you raise your kids, figure out what to fix for dinner. She helps you justify your craving, your need for chocolate. And a good girlfriend will talk to you for hours, or she'll say even more in her silence when she holds you when you're upset and cries tears to match your own. A good girlfriend is a rare and beautiful thing. She really, really, really is. So who needs girlfriends? We all do. We all do. Remember, a friend is what the heart needs all the time. So I vote that we spend the rest of the day celebrating our girlfriends, this wonderful family that we get to choose, and making the very most of the friendships in our life. Thank you all for listening.